Hi, everybody. My name is Ron. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi, Ron.
And I wanted to say to everybody, at the past 4 weeks, I wrote it to Phil in a text, I think the second weekend, has been a really nice experience for me. I can only speak for myself. And I have to say that it's brought me closer to God. Because I think that, you know, there's accountability for standing up here and talking about your truth and sharing some things that you may, you know, maybe sometimes some people may think are not part of what you should be sharing. But frankly, I'm kind of glad that we're not doing this in some, you know, didactic forum, you know, pontificating about a lot of knowledge, that it's really the format is about sharing my experience, and that's what I have to offer. And, you know, that's enough and then some for all of us, because at the end of the day, you know, when we've been through these steps or going through them, the truth is it's really not lived in the book for me. It's lived out there, because the rest of my life I have to live, which really was the problem I had. It wasn't so much the alcohol that was really my problem. It was the fact that I couldn't live. I didn't know how to think. I didn't know how to process information clearly. I didn't know how to deal with other people. I didn't know how to not feel so preoccupied with myself. And anything you said and did was always about me on some level. I didn't know how to even be with myself, and even love. We were just talking about that. Even love, I didn't know that I even had the capacity to love. I didn't know. My mother asked me when I was in the throes of my addiction, and she had no idea. My mother was very naive in that respect, and she had no idea of what was going on, and other people did. And I remember, you know, constantly always calling and always being I'm depressed. I was never diagnosed depressed, ever. I was not clinically depressed, but I diagnosed myself. And I wouldn't go see a doctor about it, that's for sure, you know, except if they were giving out certain kinds of medications that I needed or wanted, which really just were part of the whole picture. And she asked me very specifically, she said, "Sweetheart, I know you're in pain. Can't help you. Don't know what to do. And I can't hear it anymore because I don't know what to do for you. Do you love anything or anybody? Do you feel love?" And I remember it really kind of blew my mind. Of course, I had to use right after that, you know, just to take me out of even having to go there. And I remember saying to her, "I love Ryan. I love Ryan. But I don't know how to show that. I feel love for Ryan, but I don't really know what to do with that." Today, after last week, that's a whole nother story for me. So I come here with giving the experience and some of my experience, because, you know, it's a lot of days, you know, that make up the time that I'm around in AA and living, you know, through the steps and then according to spiritual principles. And, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot. Every day, there's a lot that can happen in a day. So much. And so just a little bit, you know, shows some shift in the way in which I live as opposed to the way I lived for so long. And that hasn't balanced out yet because, you know, June 29th this year, God willing, I'll have 15 years, but I was 35 when I came in here. So it's a whole other story, you know. But it has balanced out. My son was almost 14 years old. So, you know, things start to balance out in some ways. It's an interesting process. So I will say that, you know, the steps that we're talking about tonight for me are really part of my day, part of my quiet time, part of my life as I live out in the world. Because for step 10, that we take personal inventory when we were wrong, promptly admit it. there's one part of this that, you know, was shown to me was going to happen for me. And the main part for me that has happened is that I developed over time, this in practicing this very succinctly, clearly, as it's outlined, because this is outlined in the book in a specific way, but it has spiritual principles with it. So instead of walking it like a rigid machine, I got the opportunity to take it into my life and live 4 through 9 on a regular basis, really, is what that is. Because the first part, you know, was this deflating of my ego so I can be built back up in a very different way, which is really that shift, that psychic change that it talks about. It's just the thinking is not the same for me. I don't qualify things the same way. And there are certain parts of this that every day need to be brought into my thought process, my action, even if it's in quiet time, I'll go through them. But it developed what I call the inner witness. I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody, but for me it does. So, you know, I live my life, but, you know. So this inner witness, sort of this, and for me it's God, but it's something very, I don't know how to best describe it, but this witness that is inside of me, that is directly related to this conscious contact with God that I started to develop, opening the door in that third step, and then was willing to begin that ego deflating process, and then starting to take a look at the harms that I've done. And for me, I did not wait till I was done with the ninth step to do a tenth step, that's for sure, you know, or take a tenth step, however you want to call it. I mean, this is a never-done process. So I started immediately. I started long before I even, you know, went through the other steps. You know, I was given the opportunity to take a look at it when I first started to go through the book, because there are some things in the tenth step that talk about what happens when you become awake. What are the gifts of becoming awake? And I mean, I could read it to you, but it basically talks about we cease fighting anything and everything, even alcohol, because by now sanity is returned, which means I'm healthy. I have a healthy mind that can start to kind of take witness unto itself, right? And to keep that witness kind of open and alive, I need to start to take a step back and get have a practice of quiet, have a practice of taking a look at, you know, where it is. I've already done inventory, so I have a good idea of where it is that, you know, my tendencies lie, you know. I have a good idea of when the little annoyances start to come, or when I feel fearful. Now, I don't know it to the fullest extent. That's why I need to continue to do step 10, you know. So there are a couple parts to it, and I need to watch. I need to watch. That's that witness within. I need to keep a real vigil of how I'm feeling, you know. That idea of feeling for me has changed, because I don't always buy into every feeling I have, because my feelings are often created by a certain circumstance. It's not really true. So I ask myself some simple questions. A, and this is the gift of Herb. The first thing I do, right, is I ask in a situation or something when I feel that annoyance or I sense something, I go through the way the book is outlined. And for me, this works. So I ask the first question, just like it does in the book, in the first step. Am I powerless? Is there something, first thing, you know how the book is outlined, my body, and then it goes to my mind? It sort of talks about your body, and then it talks about what's wrong with our mind, what's wrong with my body, what's wrong with my mind, what's wrong with my will, and my, you know, well, my thoughts, my, all of that kind of thing, which promote action, that kind of thing, and then you end up, you know, making decisions based on self that later set you up to be hurt, which I already have a good view of what that will look like, because I've been very vigilant with this work. Very vigilant. Why? For one reason. Only one reason. I'm a powerless alcoholic. And to be a powerless alcoholic, not seeking or or taking a vigilant action towards some form of recovery, some form of recovery. I don't own AA. I don't tell, bless you, I don't tell you what to do. Some form. I will die, I will hurt somebody else, or I will, the worst part for me is a living death. I know what that feels like Bill talks about the terror. The terror was the worst part, the feeling of uselessness and self-pity. So I ask myself first, what's wrong with my body today? Is there something, you know, women, ask yourself that. You know what I'm talking about. What's going on? Did I forget what time of the month it is? or, but it's true. Men, you have your own stuff. Ask myself, is there something going on with me? Am I not feeling well? Am I tired today? I had enough sleep. Did I eat? Now, I'm not going to do that halt, because with halt, you end up fat. Shall I go on?
Yes. Yeah.
You end up sleeping with people you don't even know when you're lonely. And tired, you end up sleeping all day. So I don't do the halt thing. But it's something similar to ask, to beg the question. I now, in a way, started to become my own parent. In a way. But I don't do it on my own. Because the truth is, I cannot solely, the ego will start to regenerate itself. And I have to be very careful of that. And that's the first awareness I have. So I ask that first question, just like the book asks, what's wrong with my body? Okay, what's wrong with my mind? What's wrong with my mind? Is there something going on inside of me? Am I feeling rejection? Am I sensing that I'm not good enough? Am I insecure? Am I angry? Whatever those things are for you, you know. This is where you bring your 4 through 9 into your day, you know. It's the maintenance steps. So that practice goes into my day. And at some point, most of the time at this stage, I'm able to stop somewhere in those questions, right? Or what's wrong with my will? Am I not getting something that I think I need or want? Is there some frenetic energy that I'm going after something that maybe I need to take a step back and have a moment of pause, because it asks me to pause, a moment of pause to say, wait a minute, what is God asking me to do and what is God saying to me? The only way I know how to do that is to practice pause. And pause started out a few minutes, and now pause has become prayer meditation. Very different animal. Very different animal. The prayer is me talking, the meditation is me listening. And they, for me, they're done in unison. Within a couple minutes of the prayer, depending on, you know, where I am, what's going on, every day is different. I have no problem sticking to a rigid cycle or things to do. But as I've gotten healthier and as I've gotten more in tuned and more sensitive to and more that intuitive sense, talks about in the 11th step, I don't need so much rigidity anymore. As a matter of fact, I find it for me to be limiting. So when it's necessary, I'm able to see where it is that I have created a situation or begun to stir something that I am responsible for. Like, I'll give you an example at work. My job, I do a lot at work. I'm going to give you two interesting things. And I'm dealing with employees all the time. So I'm an HR director. I run the infrastructure of a company, which basically means, you know, there are times when I'm babysitting grown-ups. And I say that in a fun way. But the truth is that when dealing with people, you know, this work really gives you some insight into yourself, and then you get to be helpful rather than, you know, be hard on people or demanding or rigid. So I had a gentleman who was acting out tremendously. And I really liked this guy. He was fought in Iraq, you know. I mean, I thought he was a Marine. He was a great guy, you know. And I just found myself having a lot of difficulty dealing with him because he was acting out tremendously. His personal life was coming into work. He was yelling and screaming at vendors, yelling and screaming at employees, and I couldn't control him. Couldn't control him anymore. I was getting so upset about it. Really upset. In this time, I realized I better take a step back. As agitated as I was, I had enough practice of taking a step back. And when I did, I started to see that the first problem was that I was trying to control. That was my first problem. I was trying to control him. As soon as I try to do that, people retaliate. I remember that. I know I do that. Okay. He was retaliating, and I was not willing to see that until it, you know, sometimes you got to hit bottom with it, you know. Sometimes that's part of the journey, you know. I don't beat myself up to that. We don't go into remorse or self-pity, right? Right? Because we will ruin an opportunity to see something. Remorse and self-pity, or beating yourself up and doing crimes against myself that I didn't react quick enough, or I didn't do the 10th step right enough, or I didn't do this. It is just a recipe for disaster. And all it is it just starts to create, the ego will regenerate itself during that time. I promise you, I'm a perfect example of it. As soon as it's not even the prayer and meditation, that if that is somehow, you know, I've been in times where, you know, I've been going and doing this or that, and I have to take a step back, and I hadn't done that in a couple days, or I hadn't done enough, whatever that means. You know, rather than beating myself up, or if I reacted to something, or if I did something that I owe an apology, rather than beating myself up, it's a lot easier to learn how to say, I apologize, and sometimes that's enough, or tell someone exactly what it is that you see, depending on the situation. It is at that point, okay, so I did this with this guy once I took a step back. But before I did this, I called her, and I started spewing everything out to her, and I said to him, you know, this guy's nuts, you know, he's like, he has no sensibility, he has no scruples, you know, I mean, I can't keep him in this company, he's affecting everybody else, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm going on and on and on. And Herb asked me, well, what did you take a step back? Have you put the 10th step in practice here? And I said, yes, I have. He said, what do you see? I said, well, I wrote a few things down. I see that I'm trying to control this guy. I'm trying to change him. You know what the worst part of the whole thing? We go back to that Bob thing that I shared when I did the fourth step. And I'm telling you honestly, I was afraid that everybody in the company would think I had no control over anybody. And I thought everybody was going to take advantage of me. And everybody was going to disrespect. That's really what was going on. That was what was underlying my need to control him. Now, I didn't know that before I did the fourth step. That fourth step really, really, with that honest self-appraisal, fact-finding, fact-basing, I didn't cry, I didn't carry on, I didn't feel like an idiot, I didn't do any of that to myself. I said, that's what the truth is. And I felt a sense of such relief and such gift that I had known God better in that moment. It really felt good. I don't know, I'm sure you've experienced something like that. But I didn't feel like I used to feel years ago when I couldn't face what was wrong with me. And I had to point out what was wrong with everybody else. There was, and that's the paradox for me, that's the beauty of the spiritual process, is that there's paradox there, that by going to that place and taking a hard look at what it was that was wrong with my sight, I got freedom. But that's not the main thing, because feeling uncomfortable is the only way to change for me. You know, at times, not all the time. I don't have to suffer like I used to. I don't. But the part that really got me was, again, and it's like every time, it's like a new awakening. It's like, I don't say to myself, oh, I should have known that. I open up to the idea that even though I know knowledge is not enough, just wasn't enough, it's the practice that was really important for me. and to really get honest, and to get honest with my sponsor, to get honest with God, get honest with myself, take the pause, step back. Then, once I know what I'm dealing with, sit for a little while. Just a very short time. I took 24 hours to sit with that, and I released Michael from my hold on him. You know what? We're having lunch next Tuesday. He calls me all the time. Because I'm his favorite HR person. He's moved on to another company for more money. I'm his favorite HR person. He says that when he's at his new job, he misses our time where I did my human resources, human work with my employees. You know, sometimes I'm a listener over there for things that have nothing to do. Why? Because it makes for a more efficient office and the greater good of the whole. And where did I learn that? For the greater good of the whole, you know, principles, traditions of AA, you know, business meetings, watching all the frantic behavior, you know, and the agendas. Well, it's the same thing out there. This is a microcosm for me of what goes on out there. But thank God for this, because this has given me the practice to take it out there. It's not any different. Not any different. And we're no better and we're no worse off. You're in the throes of it. Crossroad. I can't, you know. There's always that crossroad. So, once I did that, I didn't run to go help someone. Book says, turn your sights, night thoughts, whatever, to helping someone else. Does that mean that I go running? So, I got to do this. You need to help me help myself. I got to do a 10-step. I don't do that. Feels too self-absorbed. I allow God. Now that I've been sort of emptied, and I've released someone else of the bondage I have on them, which they didn't even know. But you know enough here. And you learn enough. This work is vigilance. This isn't easy. Enough vigilance to be able to see more clearly what it looks like underneath than living on the surface. I didn't put down drugs and alcohol to live on the surface of life. I did that already. I lived on the perimeters of life, not having any experience with anything, and looking for an artificial one. And that killed me in life. So I don't like the effects produced by that. Therefore, I wait. But I become aware. And when I release that stuff, there's no more that anger and annoyance and all that energy, frenetic energy, eating me up, making me tired. That's, you know, a little bit of that 11th step, that I now won't be able to see God speaking through me to maybe being of service to another person. And sometimes that is just doing nothing. I have found it's different all the time. I never know what it is. There are patterns I can see. My 11th step has offered me the opportunity to develop a deeper relationship with God. It's no more of my understanding. I have a better, clearer relationship and active participation in that relationship. And it becomes wider, taller, and more abound, I should say, you know? You know, the broad highway? That's really true. It's just, it's not words. It's an experience for me more than anything else. I mean, I could quote the book till I'm blue in the face, you know? My 12th step is given me the opportunity to sit down and work with other people in this process, but that's not what that's solely about. I have gone through the book many times with other people. My brain is like a computer, so it's going to absorb stuff, so I'm going to know where things are written in the book if you go through it enough. Isn't that what studying is? I mean, you know, I'm a human being. That's what our brain does, but that doesn't mean that it's applicable for all situations every time when I'm trying to help somebody. Sometimes it's the worst thing I could do is to quote something to somebody, and I don't go there. I just don't go there. And I'm not making any suggestions to anybody. I'm just telling you what happens for me. So oftentimes, there are very small little opportunities that arouse themselves, brought to my circumference, not always to me, not to me, to the greater circumference. I'm given an opportunity to help, but help doesn't always mean action. Sometimes it means just being present for me and to be watchful of a situation and see if there is a cue. That's really the work. It's not the cue itself. It's not the action itself for me. It's the watching and becoming prepared for something that's being asked of me and getting to know what that is even before I take an action. Because I have done this for you. I have done it on the first heels of it, of a response from what I think is God speaking to me, and have failed miserably. And have fallen on my face because I only took one part of it. My ego made it bigger and made sense of it in a way that it really will do. And then I take action on it, and then I'm back to doing another 10-step process. I am. It's just the way my life can roll. So, you know.
You get that? I mean, like, I'm not crazy.
So, strike that out, by the way. So, you know, there are some gifts of the 10th step. And, you know, it's four parts, you know. It's watchful, right? Watchful. It's pause, taking a look, making amends where needed. And amends sometimes is just quietly changing your behavior, right? Because you see, for the may have not seen before. And then later an opportunity will come where it will be more obvious to those around. And the other is speak to someone, cause you want to be, I want to be really careful, because it's not that I don't live not trusting my mind. I have been given the gift of sanity, health. It's the Latin word for health. I've been given that, and I can use it rightly. Can use it rightly, or else what would be the point of me being here? I mean, I don't want to live in the rooms of AA always being chasing some kind of fear that I'm going to screw up. I mean, I don't want to live like that. The 10th step says very clearly to me that I no longer have to defend, I do not defend myself against alcohol or anything else, nothing else, not you, not myself, not God, not alcohol itself, not a situation. I'm no longer in emotive defense. I no have to. That's the gift of this. I no longer. There's no defending it, any of it, and that in and of itself is a whole nother gift. You know, learning how not to defend where you are at any given moment, what's going on in your life at any given moment. I heard a wonderful thing, and I'm just gonna. Helen walked in, and someone asked her, "Where have you been?" You know what she said? "Taking care of myself." And I think to myself, you know, some people would say, living sober, I'm sober today, or I'm going through this, or I'm going through that. She's been living her life. Just because we haven't seen her doesn't mean that she's not living her life. I want to live my life, and I want to balance this also, because without this and the language we speak, I cannot live freely. I can't. And I've already know intuitively that I don't like the effect produced by being trapped and not being free. And it gets better every day, even when it doesn't look like that. And that's my 11-step process, is that what I think I see is always something else. It's never, 99.9% of the time, what I think is happening is never what is. It's always something else. So how do I start my day? Yeah, I go to page 86. I have a practice of that. I don't take the book and read it. I started out doing that. I did. I need to improve my conscious contact with God as I understand Him. It's no longer a concept for me. It's now a conscious, which means it's right here. It's right there. I can see it in the back of my eyes, in my mind's eye, my sixth sense. I can see it. And when I can't, I have certain practices to be able to support that. Because I am a powerless alcoholic who cannot live, not learn how to drink or learn how to just be abstinent, to live without a power greater than myself, which will solve my problem. And my problem is that I don't know how to live. So I've been given back that opportunity. The other piece of it is this 12-step work. And this 12-step work is there should be more workshops on it, I believe. There should be, I'm sorry I'm using the word should. I shouldn't do that. I got that before you did. What? So there's many parts to this for me. And I was raised by someone who lives freely. And when you live freely, according to the principles, spiritual principles, they're not AA principles, they're spiritual principles. And to spirit means to, you know, spirit. It's something I can't hold on to, nor can I grab it for someone else. My only job, and it speaks it very clearly in the early part of the book, don't get on me, for it's page 18, and it's the job description of a sponsor. But it never says sponsor. It says that when one person or man has qualified the facts about himself, he can help another like no other can do in a very short time. And then it clearly states what we do and what we don't do. And those principles, for me, have come out in a much wider view. My job is not to tell anybody what to do. My job is to align myself with the God of my understanding and be a demonstration of how I'm living. So what do? I invite people into my house so they can see how I live. I invite them to go play. We go places. They invite me. I spend time with people. The only way we're going to be able to, at least the way I find that I can help people, is to spend quality time getting to know somebody. When someone asks me to help them, I don't say yes right away. Why? Because I don't need to prove anything. It's not my... I need to make sure that I do this for the right reasons. And that takes prayer and meditation. It really does. For me. I don't need to talk about how many people, who, what, where. It's not all sponsorship, whatever that means. Herb is not, I don't really call him my sponsor. He's my guide. He's just another one of us with a light on the tunnel, with the light on the hat that will guide the way. And how I walk that way is the way my feet walk, not the way he does. It comes from within me. And the greatest gift I got was being able to be truer to myself and really beginning to like who that person is. And when you really, really like who you are and who you're becoming, good, bad, and ugly, you become a demonstration for another person. But it's not just about that. It's really about living in the world at large. For me, it's living in the world at large. Because there are some people who just aren't comfortable doing that kind of work. There's so many opportunities to help and to be helpful and to let other people help you in ways that, you know, be careful of that pride and that remaining teachable thing. Because as soon as you think that you're not, and you may not even know that you think that you're not, practicing like anything else, you will be given an opportunity, or at least I have been given the opportunity, to be able to see that I'm being spoken to because I asked to grow. I asked for this. Be careful what you wish for, it may come true. So when I asked Herb to take me through, and because I wanted a new experience, I got exactly what I asked for. And it doesn't always feel good. And I say to everybody, don't run because it doesn't feel good. Stay out of the feeling business, because feelings are not the truth about life. For me, I cannot live in that. I just can't. I have a wonderful group of people that I know that we're involved in all sorts of ways. And, you know, the book talks about how you take people through, and there are times when no is a full sentence. I can no longer help you. I am no longer of service to you. It's never you're not doing what I told you to do. I cannot be of service to you, and that was what you asked of me. I asked four questions. One, why do you want to do this work? Two, why now? Three, will you go to any lengths for victory over alcoholism? And the fourth one, do you know what you're lying to yourself and others about? The answer to the, and I ask people, go ahead, go home and think about that. The answer to the first question is, I'm powerless. The answer to the second question is, I'm powerless. The answer to the third question is yes. And the fourth question is not a litany like I did the first time of all the things I think I'm lying to people about. That's a pretty, you know, that's a little contradictory. It was, I have no clue. Go back to the first question. That made all the difference for me. It's not me making the decision for anybody else. So thank you, everybody. I'm very passionate about this too, these three steps, because they're really a living, breathing mechanism. And watch yourself. Keep that witness within very sharp. And it's work. Tough. We drank to die. We have to do something similar, but in a very spiritual, loving way, to live. So thank you.